This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And they did it. They actually did it. In a moment, a look at what it means for the Senate to have changed the rules on filibusters in the way of judicial appointments, the so-called nuclear option. Let me tell you, it may not mean that the Senate is now going to run as smoothly like the congressional equivalent of a Swiss watch. Also this hour, how our traditional notions of language and communication are in some serious flux right now. How is the teaching of writing being disrupted or assisted by the advent of Facebook? And young people writing more than ever, in a sense, not just with traditional topic sentences. They're, you know, using emoticons. Two teachers will share their observations of this turmoil between text culture and traditional writing. What are your observations? Have digital media put your writing or your kids' writing skills on life support with crutches and mind respirator tools like spell check? Is anything longer than a paragraph War and Peace to you these days? Have social media made you or your kids better or worse writers? Also, how technology and our understanding of how the world works may be redefining what constitutes an act of God these days. It's more of a legal matter than a theological matter when we can see the human impacts in climate and in the places we choose to live. But first, to Washington, where the Senate has changed the rules on filibusters. That's right.
Is the Senate working now? Can anyone say the Senate is working now? I don't think so. Today, Democrats and independents are saying enough is enough. To change the rules regarding presidential nominees will apply equally to both parties. When Republicans are in power, these changes will apply to them just as well. That, Mr. President, is simple fairness.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, right there just before a vote today, striking down the rules on filibusters for judicial appointments. The bipartisan doctrine of mutually assured filibuster seems to have broken down. Does this mean that business will fundamentally change in the Senate? Rules that protect individual senators and minority parties and alliances, are they going to be ditched altogether? Joining us now is Gregory Warrow, professor of political science at Columbia University, author of the book Filibuster, Obstruction and Lawmaking in the United States Senate. Welcome to the program, Gregory.
Thank you for having me on.
How amazed are you that they actually did this?
I'm slightly amazed. If you look at the history of the Senate, I think this has been coming for a while. I'm surprised. It's surprising that Republicans sought to test the Democrats again so quickly after what happened this summer with executive branch nominees and how quickly the Democrats were able to hold together the coalition that they needed to in order to invoke the nuclear option.
And when you say nuclear option, we've talked about that before on this program. Why is it a nuclear option? And why, as you've said before, does it maybe create more problems than it solves?
Well, the term has evolved to mean different things to different people, but essentially it boils down to changing the rules in the Senate through an unconventional but not unprecedented parliamentary maneuver. So I think the term nuclear has different dimensions here, but one of the dimensions that I think the Democrats have been worried about and may need to worry about more is what the Republican response will be. Will the Republicans now use their the extensive individual prerogatives that individual senators have to cause some collateral damage? Are they going to obstruct other items of business that the Democrats want to obstruct in retaliation for the Democrats' move to go nuclear on judicial nominations?
Well, you say collateral damage, and that's exactly the next question. I mean, how much of this can be contained to judicial appointments? Is it likely that this whole dispute is really going to spread everywhere else into the Senate's business?
Well, I think that this move is historical, as people are saying, and I think it does put the Senate on a path now to become or return to, I should say, its status as a majoritarian institution. The Senate has essentially been a super majoritarian institution for the past 30 or 40 years. And now that we have majority cloture on judicial nominations, this doesn't apply to Supreme Court nominations. It's lower court nominations. But I think that probably will be the next step if there is controversy over a future Supreme Court nominee. And then the next step after that would be applying it to particular pieces of legislation.
Well, the particular nomination that motivated all of this today is in the D.C. Circuit, which is a unique court. It's a very important court. And so it's not surprising that this court and its nominations and its makeup and its balance, which has been an issue for years, should motivate all this. I guess what I'm wondering is, because some people call this option the constitutional option, isn't it the case that the Constitution supports a majoritarian Senate as well as a Senate that has a supermajority kind of approach that we've seen up until now?
Yes, I think there are arguments on both sides with respect to the constitutionality of the filibuster and supermajority cloture. While the framers rejected supermajoritarianism in some ways and accepted it in others, for example, a two-thirds vote for the override of a veto or two-thirds for changing the Constitution, the Constitution also says that the Senate and the House can make their own rules. And so if either chamber wants to adopt supermajority provisions, they can do so. I mean, the House has supermajority provisions in the sense that the motion to suspend the rules requires a two-thirds vote in support. So the House can operate in supermajority mode just like the Senate can.
Now, can I possibly take your political science hat off here and your historian hat off here and turn you into a pundit for just a second?
You can try.
All right. I'm wondering if the reading of Green Eggs and Ham by Ted Cruz in any sense eroded the sanctity of the filibuster, and that's one of the steps that brought us here?
I would say no. I think, you know, what Ted Cruz did was what lots of senators have done in the past. I think this is really about the Republicans' staunch opposition to these particular nominees. I think that, you know, what Ted Cruz did was it was largely just showmanship. But this is really about the kinds of policymaking decisions that come out of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
But the Jimmy Stewart days of heroic filibusters, they seem to be completely over.
Oh, they've been over for many years. The Senate has been operating via silent filibuster for many years, over a decade now. And I just think that that contributes to part of this in the sense that the ease with which senators could filibuster makes it more a more attractive weapon, and so it gets used more.
Gregory Walro is professor of political science at Columbia University, author of the book Filibuster: Obstruction and Lawmaking in the United States Senate. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.